This is the Business Breakfast with Owanda on Jazz FM. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.
Very good morning to Craig Earlham, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda. Craig, let's start with the US, where that trade deal that we've been talking about for some time has been signed. This is only the phase one, the preliminary trade deal. And for many critics, it really renews only commitments in the main that China has already made to organisations like the WTO. What do you make of it?
It does seem to cover certain aspects which we were expecting. There seems to be a heavy focus on Chinese purchases of various goods, whether it be agricultural, manufacturing goods, services. And that seems to be the reliance on this trade deal. And like I say, for 18 months, 2 years of work to just lead to this is a little underwhelming at this stage. And then only a partial removal of tariffs, it doesn't necessarily fill me with hope. We've said before in the show, I feel like this is not phase one. I feel like this is the deal. And if this is the deal, then it doesn't really seem worth all the aggravation of the last 2 years.
To clarify that, so you don't think that we'll be going on to a phase two, the full comprehensive trade deal that is envisaged? Why is that?
Don't get me wrong, I do feel like discussions are going to take place. At the end of the day, tariffs do remain in place and no one likes tariffs. Neither the US nor the Chinese administration will be happy about the fact that tariffs are still in place. It doesn't help the economy.
Can we clarify that? So the vast majority of these tariffs have been put up as part of the trade deal negotiation process by President Trump and then retaliations by the Chinese administration. This is about getting back to step one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were put in place to put pressure so that the other things could be discussed. I think from the Trump administration's perspective, it's impossible to get China to come to the table to talk about intellectual property or forced technology transfers or currency issues if you don't put the tariffs in place and impose the pressure to force them to the table effectively. So that's what they've done, and that's why they've left them on the table. From Trump's perspective, they are remaining in place because there needs to be an incentive on the Chinese side to come back for phase two negotiations. So from that perspective, yeah, I can understand why they are encouraged by the fact that phase two could begin and maybe even as early as this year. But as far as I'm concerned, we've had 2 years of negotiations now. And when you look on the surface of this, you're looking at what is included in phase one and you're thinking, is this all you've managed to achieve in this time? And if it is, then what are you actually hoping is going to be different next time? What are you hoping that the Chinese are going to concede on next time, which is going to encourage you to sign a phase two deal, which is far, far more engrossing? So, yeah, I mean, granted, if Trump wins an election later this year means we've got 4 more years to do this and fine, but that means 4 more years of trade negotiations. It's not exactly this simple, straightforward process that Trump promised us 4 or 5 years ago. So,
In the process, both economies and the rest of the world have been, you know, we are having a slowdown out of these trade negotiations. That's not an edifying process to look forward to for the next 4 years either.
No, it's not. Exactly. That's exactly the point. You look at the US, Trump promised 4% growth. It's been closer to 2.5% recently, barring that 1 year when we had the massive tax cuts. You look at China, we're slipping below 6%. You look at the UK, obviously we've got our own issues. But you look at other countries which are heavily reliant on trade. We look at Germany, Singapore, Hong Kong. All of these countries have been affected by the trade war. So the prospect of more negotiations, which, again, I've not spoken to anyone who's actually optimistic about a phase two negotiation. It is a little underwhelming and a little bit disappointing, if I'm perfectly honest.
Today, President Trump is meeting with the EU's trade representative. Are there signs here of what we can expect from pressure to be put on the EU when it comes to trade questions? Because, of course, Germany's particularly trade surplus when it comes to goods going back and forth over the Atlantic is something that President Trump has poked at before. But could this, as you say, underwhelming negotiation suggest that the EU doesn't have quite as much to fear?
I wouldn't say not as much to fear, per se. I do think that what we're going to see now is the US turn its attention to an easier battle, and I do think the US found the renegotiating NAFTA quite easy because it wasn't, I think as Simon put it on again, I think I've continuously referenced the end of your show, but it wasn't a battle of equals, the NAFTA renegotiations. It was very much what a strong US facing off against Canada and Mexico, and so therefore it seemed to be a more straightforward renegotiation. When it came to China, it very much was a match of equals, and that's why things have taken so long and why I think we've come to this underwhelming agreement. Europe is more of a match of equals than NAFTA was, for example. But at the same time, Europe's also quite weak at the moment, whether because of Brexit and the impact that that has, because they've never truly got through the financial crisis, because Germany has just narrowly avoided a recession. The US may look at Europe and say, you know what, this is a far easier battle than it would be for China. Don't get me wrong. It's never going to be as straightforward as Trump will always promise, but it's probably a little bit easier to get to get Europe on board, because what they're demanding for one is not as huge as what they're demanding from China in terms of things like state aid and technology, etc. It is very much more of a trade balance issue with regards to Europe, in particular with Germany. So you think it could
but
be easier?
But there are elements when it comes to things like the proposed digital taxes on primarily US. Firms, the increased state regulation when it comes to, I mean, the EU is the only game in town when it comes to actually batting on an even field against the US when it comes to things like regulation, these enormous companies. This is something that Trump has seen as a personal attack.
It is, and I think from Trump's perspective, in his eyes, the taxation, for example, it's almost in his eyes the tariff that's being imposed on our companies, and therefore it almost feels like a slight reversal of circumstances compared to what he's dealing with China. This is Europe saying we actually want to tax your companies and therefore potentially make them less competitive and potentially also withdraw take revenue from the Treasury's pocket and put it in our pocket. So it's a different battle, but like I say, I feel like Europe's coming from it from a point of weakness. And I know people always point to China as a point of weakness because of the trade deficit, but China's never weak. They are still growing at a rate of 6%. They do still have massive state-backed firms, and therefore it's always going to have been a very complex negotiation. Whereas when you're talking about Europe, there is a lot of instability in Europe. There is a lot of issues that Europe is contending with on its own without a trade war.
And finally then, where do you see the UK actually placing itself in these? Because it's going to be a question of picking sides and picking allies, even if they're temporary. If you've got the US facing off against EU and against China, you've got increasing moves in the WTO between the EU working with the US against China over state aid, etc. Where is the UK going to find its friends?
The UK finds itself in this almost unintended strong position in a very bizarre way. I've previously talked about the UK as being the almost star player that football clubs are vying for, the signature that these various clubs are vying for. They want us on their team, as it were. From China's perspective, when it comes to Huawei, they want the UK to adopt 5G because of the statement that would send, how much of a symbolic intention that would send to the rest of the world, where countries are backing away from the Chinese 5G technology. From the US's perspective, it would be a massive coup to take this country who's backing away from the EU and get them on side, which again is where Huawei in a weird way comes back into it. And from your perspective, it's about keeping us as close as possible. So yeah, it is a battle of these major superpowers to get the UK. And that's not to say that we are a major superpower ourselves, but it clearly does highlight the fact that we are, in the eyes of the US, Europe and China, extremely significant. And
sure, and top 10 economy size, etc. So yeah,
exactly,
a small player. We've had those inflation figures out. We're at 3-year lows. This is an ongoing issue, but are we, with the election and more certainty for markets and for businesses, do you see this as the end or an ongoing trend?
What we're seeing right now, just globally, is actually just a change in trend on the inflation front. It seems that for the past 2-3 decades, we've been seeing inflation dropping. And that's creating massive questions over what central banks need to actually be doing and where interest rates need to be. Naturally, from a consumer perspective, you always think interest rates, you want them as low as possible, right? That reduces your mortgage, it reduces your credit card bills, etc.
Unless you're a saver, of course.
Unless you're a saver, at which point then it becomes extremely difficult. So this is the conundrum that central banks are facing right now. And then there's also the other perspective as well of, do we want Japanification around the globe, where you have ultra low interest rates for many, many decades, and the impact that has on product activity on economic growth and other things which affect our everyday lives. And it's hard to know exactly what causes what effectively, what the chicken and the egg scenario. Is it the ultra low interest rates which cause the productivity, or is it the lack of productivity which causes the ultra low interest rates? So central banks are being very careful at the moment, and we've seen efforts, especially from the Federal Reserve in the US, for example, to raise interest rates because they want to try and stimulate the economy in a different manner. But other central banks like the UK are being caught in this kind of low interest rate trap right now. And that's why I find it almost infuriating that we're talking about the Bank of England, in a way, talking about cutting interest rates at the start of this year, because it feels like we've just gone through a year where we could have maybe done with a bit of a stimulus in the economy, but they held back because of all the Brexit uncertainty, the political uncertainty. They decided we'll hold off and wait for this to pass before doing anything. Whereas now we're using data which is almost irrelevant, and I keep using this same analogy. You don't go to the doctor on the 1st of January and expect to get a good health check because you know that you've just had Christmas, you've had a very boozy December, you've eaten a lot of bad food, so you don't go for an accurate health check on the 1st of January. Then don't take the pulse of the UK economy in November, because we had all of the political uncertainty, all of the Brexit uncertainty, so therefore you're not going to get an accurate reflection of the actual health of the economy.
But by that logic, there's always a crisis. We would never actually change interest rates because we'd always be on to the next thing that is out of the ordinary.
Yeah, it's never going to be the ideal time to actually take the temperature of the UK, but I would argue that a few months from now is far more relevant than November. So it's just that thing of, let's just let what we've just gone through set in and then determine exactly what the UK needs in terms of stimulus, because we're also at a point right now where, let's face it, a 25 basis point rate cut is not going to solve our problems. But what it is doing, it's going to push us closer to 0%, so that when a recession does eventually hit, and I always say recessions are never due, we can never say, do you know what, we've gone 10 years without a recession, we are due one. We're never due a recession, but that doesn't mean that one can't hit in the next 2 years. And when one hits, I'd much rather have interest rates at 2%, we can cut by 1 or 2% and really actually help households, than at 0.25%, where then you're saying straight to quantitative easing, which no one can actually provide any clear evidence.
Greg,
it's actually made a big
impact.
I suspect
we'll be talking about this for some time to come, but that's Craig Earnham there, market analyst at Oanda. Thank you very much indeed for joining me this morning.
The Business Breakfast with Oanda on Jazz FM. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.